This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, sitting in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. Sloth selfies, elephant rides, tiger hangouts, dolphin swims. These are just some of the attractions offered by the wildlife tourism industry, and they've become so popular these days, they're nearly synonymous with contemporary travel. The industry isn't new, but thanks to social media platforms like Instagram and Facebook, these activities are more visible and marketable than ever before. Wildlife tourism allows visitors to enjoy animals up close in their natural habitats. But what happens when you take an even closer look at the industry? Are the animals enjoying themselves too? At what cost to animals is business booming? Here with me in studio is Natasha Daly, a writer and editor for National Geographic, covering animal welfare and exploitation. She's the reporter behind Nat Geo's June cover story about wildlife tourism behind the scenes. Natasha, welcome to 1A.
Thanks, Sasha, for having me.
First things first, Natasha, what do we mean when we talk about wildlife tourism? Talk about the wide array of experiences that this includes.
Right. So wildlife tourism really can run the gamut from going into the forest with binoculars looking for birds to going on safari to having these up close experiences with exotic animals. So it really does run. There's a vast spectrum that it covers.
And now you made a short documentary that showcases some of what you found while traveling and researching this story. Here's a piece of that documentary.
We came behind the stadium where the elephants perform, and we found this juvenile elephant. He has a gaping red wound at his temple. He also has a broken leg. The other one is chained up. He looks totally emaciated, skin and bones. And this is the worst shape I've seen an elephant in Thailand. All in the name of entertainment.
Wow, I have to say, I watched that earlier, and as we were just discussing, it was a lot.
Yes, being there in person was extremely difficult. So just a little background on our story. So photographer Kirsten Luce and I traveled around the world over the course of about a year, looking at various hotspots where this industry is thriving. And that clip you just heard was from a elephant attraction outside of Bangkok, Thailand. And we found this juvenile elephant behind a stadium.
Give us an overview of where all you went to.
Right. So we traveled. We really wanted to go to hotspots around the world where this up close, these up close encounters with captive wildlife are thriving. So we went to Thailand. We were there for about a month. We went to Russia. We went to Hawaii. And where this all started to rewind was actually in the Amazon rainforest, where we are looking at these experiences with sloths, caimans, anacondas, et cetera.
That's what I was just going to ask you. What kinds of wildlife tourism did you encounter along the way?
Right. So we were really looking at native species in each place we went. So, and the reason we were doing that is because, for example, you may go to Thailand as a traveler, and something that's kind of often at the top of people's bucket list is wanting to get close to an elephant or a tiger. So we really want to look at animals native to the countries where we were traveling to see how they're used for these unique wildlife experiences.
Laura tweeted, she says, "We went on our honeymoon to Thailand with visions of riding an elephant. Upon arrival, we were warned of the horrific condition used to break the elephants and opted to visit a sanctuary instead, where we could feed the elephants and give them a bath. It was more expensive, but far more humane."
Right.
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that this is increasingly, I mean, first of all, to back up a little bit, what I think Laura is describing is a process that is pretty universal based on what we found in our reporting. So in order for an elephant, for example, to be docile enough to interact with humans up close, to give those rides or even give those baths or perform tricks, they have to be trained from a young age. And so we encountered hundreds of elephants through our time in Thailand and spoke to trainers, et cetera. And typically what happens when the elephant is young is that the elephant is separated from its mother and that it is slowly trained using an instrument called a bull hook, which is a wooden stick with a metal hook on the end, to comply, to sit, to stand, to do tricks, and essentially to be able to obey the owner. So I think that's what Laura's describing, what she heard about before she went there. And maybe she didn't realize before she went that this is prolific throughout the industry.
Can you describe a bit more about the conditions that you found upon your travels? And tell us, what kind of responses do tourists get when they actually ask these attraction owners about the living conditions of the animals? I know Laura, she says she was warned, but sometimes people ask.
Right. So in terms of the living conditions that we encountered, so in large part, I would say what we'd often find is that elephants at these elephant camps are confined in stalls when they're not out giving rides or performing. Usually they'll have a chain around their ankle, be attached to a pole, and they don't really have an ability to move very much. Typically, they won't really get to have other interaction with elephants. Elephants are very social, so not being able to have that interaction can be a red flag. So these are just some examples of the conditions that we would see repeatedly while on our travels.
And how did seeing all of it make you feel?
To be honest, it was difficult to see. I think that it was not everything we saw was as horrific as the clip you just heard. There was absolutely a spectrum, and, you know, some days were easier than others. There were times that Kirsten and I would see a specific situation and truly be blown away by it and be very saddened by what we were seeing. And then there were other times that we realized, you know, okay, this is not nearly as concerning as maybe we saw yesterday. And I think that really represents the industry as a whole. There is not kind of one size fits all situation that each elephant is in, but overall, they're all largely part of this industry where they are trained for the most part at a young age to have these experiences.
Let's go to another clip from your documentary.
We went to Elephant Valley in Chiang Rai, Thailand. They have elephants that have been rescued from the traditional industry, and tourists are not allowed to get close to the elephants.
This is probably the only interaction that tourists will get while they're here. It's snack time, so they're able to feed each of the elephants some bananas, and you can see this barrier is there mostly for to prevent people from going into the elephant grounds. So it's totally voluntary. The elephants come for snack time, and then they can leave whenever they want. So it's a sustainable option for elephant tourism in the area.
So Natasha, these attractions are technically legal, right? You know, what kind of action can be taken either on the part of the industry or on the part of the consumers?
Yes. So I think it's really important to know that everything that's going on in Thailand with elephants and tigers, et cetera, these are all legal activities.
They are all legal.
Yes, yes. Everything that's happening that we described that you just heard are above board and legal and, you know, authorized by the government.
Nothing is wrong with what is happening.
Right, exactly.
Interesting. Now, we mentioned earlier the role of social media in popularizing these attractions. I know I, for one, have been dying to go to Thailand, and I'm thinking, oh, wow, the first thing I want to do is take photos with the elephants, because that's what everyone does on my Instagram feed. But what else has changed about the industry, if anything, that's exacerbated the issue of ethics here?
Yes. So I think what you describe is actually a really common desire. You know, people love animals. They want to get close to them. You go to Thailand, and absolutely one of the things most people want to do, based on a year of reporting, talking to dozens of tourists, is get close to an elephant. So I think that yes, this is exacerbated by the fact that, I mean, first of all, these activities are nothing new. This is not something that's popped up in the last few years by any means. But what really has changed the game is social media. So just as you describe, you may be scrolling idly through your Instagram feed, see a friend or even just, you know, a celebrity or influencer that you may follow having this beautiful picturesque experience with an elephant. And you might think, wow, I really want to do that as well. So what social media functions as is essentially viral advertising, intentionally or not, for these experiences.
Zuzu wrote on our Facebook page, please stop riding elephants and camels, swimming with dolphins, taking photos with any animal. You are participating in and funding their abuse.
Right. So I think that the key thing here is that most people do not want to hurt an animal. Most people do not want to think that they're contributing to any sort of abuse. So what I think is important to remember is that it's extremely important to do your homework, to do your research. If you don't want to think that you may be contributing to these activities, then you really want to research ahead of time what you're getting into before you pay your money at the door to buy a ticket, but also before maybe you post it to social media and recommend it to your friends and family.
You wrote in your reporting that you're most concerned about elephants and tigers. Why?
Right. I think the nature of the elephant and tiger industry in Thailand, and I keep bringing up Thailand because it's where we reported from for so long, is a massive part of the tourist economy. So there are about 3,800 captive elephants in Thailand, and a huge majority of them are part of the tourism industry. And, they're so popular and remain so popular that these experiences are something that is a huge sort of dimension of this wildlife tourism industry. Tigers, I'm glad you brought them up because there are two kind of very popular experiences with tigers well in Thailand. One is snuggling a tiger cub up close. You'll go to a facility, you'll have a baby tiger, you'll be able to cuddle it for 5 minutes and then sort of move on. Another really popular activity is posing with adult tiger cubs, like right next to them, getting your photo taken. But what people may not realize is that tiger cubs are often speed bred for this industry, which means their mothers are bred over and over. They're taken from their mothers shortly after birth. And tigers are only little for so long.
Right.
So in order to always have new baby tigers to cuddle, a business will have to always have new baby tigers. So I think that that's maybe something people don't realize by just going for a few hours.
Coming up, we'll discuss tips for ethical animal encounters on vacation. We're speaking with Natasha Daly, writer and editor for National Geographic. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. Veteran Mitch Hoyt founded Skinny Sticks Maple Syrup, and he's showing that small businesses can do big things. Mitch started making syrup from a few trees in his Wisconsin backyard and now is connecting with customers worldwide with help from Google Tools. Skinny Sticks is one of millions of small businesses using Google to grow. Learn how Google is helping businesses in your state at google.com/economic impact.
1965, a darkened street corner in Selma, Alabama, and a murder. A new podcast exposes the lies that kept this murder from being solved.
And explores memory, myth, and accountability for a crime at the heart of the civil rights movement. From NPR, White Lies. Listen and subscribe now.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're discussing wildlife tourism with Natasha Daly of National Geographic. Natasha, not all of what you saw in your travels was necessarily grim or unethical. Talk about animal sanctuaries and other more ethical attractions.
Right. So the sanctuary sort of movement is something that has really grown in Thailand over the last few years. And largely this has come from tourist demand. I think it's important to note here that this entire industry is driven by consumer demand, by consumer dollars. So as people start to demand different experiences or want different things, the industry does follow. And so what you've been seeing in the last decade or so is that many tourists have been increasingly aware that there are issues going on in this industry. And they've been seeking out more natural, more humane experiences, and the market has followed. So over the last several years in Thailand, you have seen a opening of places that call themselves elephant sanctuaries. And this is, you know, there's absolutely a spectrum. And these sanctuaries are in large part vastly more humane than elephant attractions where the elephants give rides all day or do tricks. There are some issues involved in this is that, you know, often people may do a Google search for elephant sanctuary. You may come across a website. It says we're an elephant sanctuary. We don't offer any riding. But then you may get there and they may offer an activity that still relies on interaction like bathing, for example. So while this is in many ways an improvement in terms of the elephant's day-to-day life, it may still raise red flags because as long as that up-close interaction exists, that elephant will have to have been trained in order to stand next to you. So I think that these are red flags that the industry is still working through and is important for tourists to know that if you really are seeking an experience where you can look to a hard line between something that you think that won't contribute towards elephant abuse or training in any way, you'll probably want to seek experiences that offer observation only. So this brings me to one experience that I had in Thailand that you actually heard the last clip from.
Oh, yeah.
It was a place called Elephant Valley in Chiang Rai, close to Chiang Mai, Thailand, in the northern part of the country. And this is a place where their five elephants were previously in the logging and trekking camp industry. And now they live at this sanctuary where they're able to kind of roam free. They're able to interact with each other. Tourists come in small groups, but tourists cannot get close to them. They can't bathe them. They can't ride them. And what this means is that the elephants can sort of just be elephants. So when you're looking for these sorts of experiences, if that's something you're interested in, you'll want to we would recommend, based on what we found in our reporting, is that observation is something you really want to kind of keep in mind.
Natasha, is there a cultural component to this conversation, too? To what extent is this shaped by how different countries view animals and animal rights?
Right. So I think that, you know, a cultural anthropologist would be able to speak to this in depth. So I think I can't necessarily comment on cultural expectations within cultures and explanations for this, but there are a few things that we do know. First of all, we know that over the last 15 years, trips abroad taken by people around the world have doubled. So this industry is growing. But what we also
know... And how big is it? Let's make that clear. What's the scope here, money-wise?
Right. It's actually really tough to determine. No one really knows. There hasn't been any quantitative analysis of what the financial scale is of the wildlife tourism industry. So hopefully that's something that will continue to be researched in years to come.
Okay.
But what we do know is that this jump in tourists is driven partly by Chinese tourists who are taking twice as many trips abroad as they were, as any other nationality as they were a decade ago. So this is something that we encountered as we visited various tourist attractions. Owners of these camps would frequently tell us that the shows and the rides are desired in large part by their Chinese visitors. So for whatever reason that is, I'm not quite sure, but that's a reality that exists. Something that I think is important to note is that, you know, in China, there aren't any federal animal welfare laws. So that may in some part contribute to possibly a lack of awareness or different attitudes towards the treatment of animals in captivity. So that, and whereas, you know, in the West, there are frequently news stories about animals around the world who may be in conditions that aren't ideal to the reader. And so this is something that pops up and up. So I think that maybe an increased awareness may contribute to the fact that some Western tourists are desiring experiences that are maybe a little more ethical.
Is it wrong to project one's own ethical standards onto other countries? Like, how do we navigate something like that?
You know, it's tough because there aren't any universal standards for these experiences. There is not any body you can turn to that will tell you this place is something, is somewhere where you should go and this place isn't. It's really actually difficult to find those guidelines to sort of tell you what to do and what not to do. I think what is something that we can turn to, they're called the five freedoms. And these are really sort of universally recognized by veterinary bodies in the US and Canada and Europe and around the world as standards through which we should treat animals to mitigate their suffering.
You said the five freedoms?
Yes, they're called the five freedoms. And some examples of the five freedoms are freedom from hunger and thirst, freedom from discomfort, freedom from pain or injury, freedom to express their normal behavior, and freedom from fear and distress. So if you're able to look at these experiences through those lenses, it may help you identify, okay, you know, this experience that I'm researching online doesn't seem like it adheres to the five freedom standards. So that may help you evaluate for yourself which experiences you may want to contribute to. And ultimately, that's what this all comes down to, is people arming themselves with the knowledge of what goes into this industry and being able to identify for themselves what they may want to pay money to contribute to.
Natasha Daly is a writer and editor for National Geographic. More just ahead. Stay close.
Support for 1A and the following message come from the Platinum Card from American Express. Conversations and civil debate in our society push us forward and connect us with the rest of the world. With the Platinum Card, earn 5x membership rewards points on flights booked directly with airlines or with American Express Travel. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Don't live life without it. Visit americanexpress.com/exploreplatinum. Terms apply.
And before we get back to the show, I want to share some news about the other podcast I host, How I Built This. We're returning to San Francisco for the second How I Built This Summit, supported by American Express. I'll be joined there by founders of companies like Instagram, Slack, Away, Bliss, JetBlue, and many, many more. Visit summit.npr.org to learn more, and I hope to see you there.
Back now to our conversation on what's really behind those cute selfies with wild animals, with National Geographic's Natasha Daly. Stuart emailed us. He says, why are we targeting so-called exotic animals in the East and not, say, riding horses at a dude ranch in Montana? What's the difference?
Right. So I think that one thing to to note is that horses, for example, are domesticated animals. They've been domesticated for, you know, a very, very long time by humans. They're used to interacting with humans. And so the training process to get that horse to, you know, give a person a ride at a dude ranch, for example, is very different from the training process that goes into preparing an elephant for a lifetime of these up-close experiences. So I think that that is one distinction that we want to keep in mind. And that's really why we wanted to look at specifically wild animals in captivity in this reporting, because wild animals specifically undergo various, in many forms, especially in Thailand where we were, training that has to allow them to you know, have these encounters, for example.
In 2017, you reported on a tool that Instagram added to its app to alert users of possible animal abuse. Can you talk about that tool?
Yes. So in 2017, and this is following a story we did in the Amazon, and very quickly what we were looking at in the Amazon was actually wild animals being poached from the jungle illegally for use in the tourism industry. So sloths, caimans, anacondas, et cetera. And after our story ran, Instagram actually responded to, they're aware of the fact that these activities are shared through social media. I think that something that's important to keep in mind is that they're not in the business of policing behavior. So their hands are tied when it comes to stopping people from sharing photos of these experiences, especially if they're legal, such as in the case in Thailand. But what they did was they targeted dozens of hashtags associated with wildlife tourism, like sloth selfie, tiger selfie, I believe. Yeah. And so what happens, and it's still in place, so when you will search an Instagram hashtag sloth selfie, a pop-up will come up on your screen that says something along the lines of, the content you're viewing may be harmful to animals. Click here to learn more. And it takes you to a page in Instagram's help center with lots of information from various NGOs and animal welfare organizations, educating people on what they might want to look for. So this is a great step from Instagram in sort of, you know, approaching this issue on their platform.
But are we seeing these kinds of initiatives elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think that elsewhere on social media.
Yes.
So as to my knowledge so far, what we've seen to date is this Instagram movement. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the months and years to come, especially now that this issue is so much on the radar, I think, of social media users. It'll be interesting to see how the kind of social media industry responds.
Now, I want to read an email from Matthew. He says, I was in Mexico with my family at a wildlife park, and they wanted to swim with the dolphins. My 14-year-old daughter at the time watched the harnessing and corralling of these mammals and turned to me and said, I don't want to do this anymore. We no longer go to these parks, zoos, or circuses, as the rest of my family agreed it wasn't fun to watch animals forced to entertain. So even a young child was able to see that something wasn't quite right there.
Right. I mean, I think that's really interesting. I think children tend to, based on my experience, tend to have a really keen kind of sense of what something may not feel quite right. And I think that that actually raises a really good point, that it's so important to trust your gut when you're out there on vacation, especially in a place you may not be familiar with. You may not even speak the language. But if something to you in that circumstance may not feel quite right, then it's important to sort of listen to your intuition.
Now, let's say I'm starting to plan a trip and I go to Google, right? And I'm looking for ethical animal encounters. What should I look for online?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to know that don't necessarily just pay attention to the language used on a website. So if a place calls themselves a sanctuary, okay, that's great. They may be a sanctuary, but they also may not be. In Thailand, for example, there are no sort of regulations in terms of who can call themselves a sanctuary and who can't. That word can be thrown around willy-nilly. So I think that what you really want to do is, if you're interested in having these sort of experiences, it's a great place to start. Yeah, Google ethical elephant sanctuary, ethical tiger experience, for example. But then once you get to the attraction's website or their page on TripAdvisor, you may want to look at 1- and 2-star reviews. So often the kind of negative reviews are where animal welfare concerns are detailed. You also want to look at actually the activities that a place offers. If they're offering interaction, that may be a red flag. If they go out of their way to say, we don't offer any interaction, here's why, that may be a good sign if that's something you're interested in. So it's just really, really important to arm yourself with the knowledge.
Now, is it possible for any wildlife tourism to be truly ethical if it means animals are being held in captivity? Just sort of on that same thought you were just on. How do you frame the conversation of ethics?
Right. So I don't think that captivity is the problem at all here. There are, for example, with elephants, domesticated elephants, the 3,800 elephants that are in captivity in Thailand cannot be re-released to the wild. These are animals that are now dependent on human care and have to remain in human care. So the concept of wild animals in captivity is maybe not the focus that we want to highlight. What we're really looking for is the treatment of animals in captivity. So again, you can go back to the five freedoms to sort of evaluate experiences through that lens. You can really look at how, when you're there on the ground, look at how these animals are being kept. Look if they have social contact with other members of their own species. Look at the space they actually have to roam. That's really important. So I think that, yes, like, we don't want to frame this in the sense that, you know, seeing animals in the wild is good, seeing animals in captivity is bad. That's absolutely not the case. It's more a case-by-case basis. There's a massive spectrum of how animals are treated, and you just want to do your homework.
And just so it's clear, who decides what's ethical? Is there like a certification process?
There's not. I mean, that's kind of the big challenge of this. No one decides what's ethical. I mean, I think that if we're looking at what's ethical through the lens of, okay, are we mitigating suffering? And if we put the standard of suffering as sort of our baseline, we don't want to contribute to animal suffering while we're seeking entertainment, then you can use that as your baseline and your approach. And through that, you can evaluate whether that animal is suffering or not, or whether they're thriving. So I think that that's something that the five freedoms really come in handy about, looking for experiences that offer observation, because again, there's just a huge spectrum. And if you're looking at observation only in a natural sort of habitat, it's likely that that experience may be less likely to cause suffering for that animal.
I want to read an email from Dee. Dee says, there is currently a popular commercial from a financial firm showing an older couple bathing elephants and meeting with their financial advisor to ensure that they can do this every year. Do businesses ever consider what their ads promote other than their products?
I think that's a very important point. That, you know, for example, I think the show Amazing Race recently went to a location where they rode elephants. So, again, this is something that comes down to awareness. I don't think companies and the industry is maybe even necessarily aware that what they're putting in their commercials may be raising these red flags. So, again, this isn't something that just comes down to, you know, travelers need to be aware. I think that the whole, you know, advertising community as a whole needs to be aware. It's something that the more aware people are, the less likely they are to inadvertently promote experiences that may not be ethical.
Right. Now, let's talk about who's doing it well. Like, you know, what were some of the countries that were handling wildlife tourism the best? And where would you tell people to gravitate to when they're looking to plan trips that involve animals? Where specifically?
Right. So I think it's tough to say which countries are doing this best, because I think that these activities go on. There's a spectrum in every country in the world. For example, these tiger experiences I describe in Thailand, they also exist throughout the United States. So this is something that I think what it comes down to is that in many countries, these experiences are legal. And I think that's important for people to know. So often people will say, well, why can't these animals just be rescued? Well, it's because that it's legal and then no one's breaking any laws necessarily. So I think that what people really want to do is be able to tell for yourself, know that your dollars actually change the industry. The entire industry is so entrepreneurial that when consumer demand asks for something new, the industry will follow.
And briefly, you know, National Geographic is also getting involved and raising awareness about this issue. Can you talk about the new social media campaign surrounding wildlife tourism briefly?
Yes. So we've started a hashtag called hashtag NatGeo Wildlife Tourism. And we're looking for people to sort of share this one shareable image from our story to raise awareness in their own communities. Because what's so important, this all comes down to people spreading awareness themselves. This movement will live and die on people spreading awareness to their own friends and family. And so I think that getting involved on social media is key.
Natasha Daly is a writer and editor for National Geographic, covering animal welfare and exploitation. What's next for you?
I'm not sure yet. That's a really good question.
Sky's the limit, right? Natasha, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Today's conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about Catherine and Miranda and the rest of the production team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.